This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Sometimes you just gotta be everything.
We're going international this week to talk with Darius, a designer from Poland. Growing up as a fan of the old school design of the Charlotte Hornets logo, he got a start designing wallpapers in the early 2000s and built a platform that grew to over a million impressions. He now freelances with clients all around the world. All right, DT, do you want to call out the time?
Oh, I'm not even at time that he is yet. 44. That was probably bad.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today. Joining us today is Darius Akiewicz, who is an international designer based out of Poland. So we're taking this show international. Excited to hear your background and story. And thanks for taking the time to join us on the show here, Darius.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Darius.
Yeah, you have an interesting background on how you got into sports, and it wasn't necessarily the sports graphics, but more web. It sounds like where you started when you initially wanted to get into sports. Where did that love of sports come from? Did you grow up watching a ton of sports? Do you have a favorite sport that you started out watching that got you hooked? And how did you figure out that you could take a route of getting into design for a career?
Actually, I started with digital wallpapers. So back in the day, everyone wanted to just change their screen wallpaper. So that was the first step. And pretty much from there on, it was all sports. Like I never considered other ways, other design, you know, routes. When I fell in love with connecting both of my passions together, it's just something clicked, and that was it. And then it got, I was developing, you know, my skills and everything. And like step by step, I just thought that this is the thing that I want to do. Like this works with my character. This works with what I like in life. And it started pretty early because when I was like 10 years old, I was a big fan of the Charlotte Hornets. And also I'm as old as Cole or whatever they say these days. Like I remember the internet starting. So like no one had, had access to it. And then after watching the games and everything, we got hooked, with the dial up modem with the crazy sound that is, not sure if you guys are familiar with that.
The AOL startup sounds. Yep. For sure.
Yeah. That too, like, I would know everything about the Hornets. And it was like, my mom was like, how do you know shoe sizes of the players? And I was like, there wasn't so much information. Like right now, I remember that. And that connection between sports, internet, basketball, and those things together. And then from those desktop wallpapers, I would post them on message boards because like there was no social network. So I would post them there and people would kind of request different things from me. And then it was hard to kind of go, you know, 20 pages of those wallpapers. And at some point I decided that I could do, actually a guy hit me up. It was called Marek. And he said, like, I can build a website for you. And I was like, okay. And at that point, he said, like, he can do a whole website, database and everything. So from just being me at that point and him, he grew that website to 16 international designers. And things got bigger and bigger. And we were, like, getting requests from athletes and we had a whole team of people. So that was a learning curve for me, because I would have to also talk to everyone and kind of manage things. Looking back at that, maybe I wasn't the most mature leader or whatever, but everyone starts somewhere. So we grew that website pretty big. We had like a one million unique views in 2 years. So at that point it was huge, because the only advertising was like going through banners in a link section on various websites. So that was only where we were getting that stuff. And we had some Polish designers, we had some international designers. We had a beef with this other website called the West Coast Remix. So it was the West Coast versus the East Coast, but we were in Poland. So, but it was all cool in the end. We had some good time over there, and then we transitioned, kind of everyone went to something different. Some people stayed in design, some went to other careers. So that's the start.
Awesome. Do you have a favorite wallpaper that you built?
From those back in the day?
Yeah.
None of that stuff should be visible right now. I had like...
You wouldn't put it up, hang it?
And sometimes I put some of those like the hardwood classics on Instagram sometimes, you know, Throwback Wednesday or something. Like the first wallpaper I did with the Hornets, I had there was a gel filter in Photoshop 6.0. So it was pretty much dude in front of a gel background. And it said it gotta be the headband, because the Hornets swept the Miami Heat in that year in the series, and it was because of the headband. One of the players I couldn't find a picture of, so he was a screenshot from NBA Live. So that's some illustration in there.
In your current day work, like what type of projects do you like working on the most? And kind of talk about, you know, what current projects look like.
Yeah, I like most stuff that I do is for social. So whenever I get a good InDesign project in, so creating some kind of various types of media guides or things for magazines, that's something that I love, because I always like typography was always something that I looked forward to. In college, we had some classes for typography, and my love for it during that time, exploded, I would say, because I actually gotten a lot better in college than later on. So right now, whenever I get anything that I can build up like that with a lot of text, and the social media stuff many times can get repetitive, or you're in a certain branding and you do that for a longer period. So I like those projects. And I had a challenging one. I was building the media guide for the Basketball Champions League Final Four at some limited time, and I managed to do 52 pages, and it wasn't like it was also graphics heavy. So we wanted all of that to pop together and kind of create a nice feel. But it was the one person doing 52 pages, so it definitely was some longer nights and some early wake ups. And I also want to do one for magazines, and trying to explore that through a bit more,
And I'm actually gonna go back a little bit, because you brought up something there about in college and projects. Like, was that part of your major? And what if it was, what made you decide to major in something like that in college?
When I was finishing high school, I went to a high school that wasn't really, it was just to do, I'm not sure how it works in the States, but we have like profiles for the school. So I was in like environment, and it was cool at that point, but it was just a school to do. And then I was like, oh, I would like to take a year off and decide what I want. My mom said, no way, you're going to college, because if you won't, then you'll never come back there. that was actually a good idea. And even my mom felt, and I was like, oh, there's no graphic design colleges. And she's like, boom, 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 you'll go. You can go here, here. And I was like, okay, maybe she's right. You know, sometimes you have to listen to the elders and not be the wisest one and whatever. So I went to college, and aside from because you have to do different stuff, you have math, you have programming, you have web design and things. So we had a lot of classes about typography, about print, about graphics background, etc. So in hindsight, that was a great decision, you know, because I actually learned a lot. It wasn't like one of those schools where you just go by and that's all. So I would say I actually got the most from professors down there. And they gave me some old school knowledge. It wasn't like, oh, you have to click this and do that. You know, it was always like software is software, but your design knowledge is something a lot different. And, you know, you have to know the rules to break the rules. So that gave me some additional, like, I would say, you know, you feel better about yourself. Because I was probably too cocky going in there, like, oh, I know everything, blah, blah, and I knew Photoshop. And that wasn't it. It's like there's a whole bunch of things that are interesting. And I think even in the time of AI and all of that, it's still fun to learn the design values and the fundamentals, you know, just for yourself even, because it's fun. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm probably, you know, the AI bros and everything, rustle some feathers, but I have a completely different feeling from designing something on my own, even if it's MIDI-core, than doing that with AI. And I understand it's beautiful pictures and it's very nice stuff. And yeah, I like the value of the end product, but I get much more satisfaction doing something on my own. And I would say I will use it. I use it sometimes, but more as another thing in the toolbox. And then when a client asks about something, I can be like, okay, this is probably better to do with this. And that's also another layer of the whole design game, I would say. College, you know, the background and the freelancing career, and now the change in technology. I think all of that makes a nice connection together.
I'm curious, you've talked about being a huge Charlotte Hornets fan. You briefly mentioned, you know, watching them and some of the things that you like about them and why you were attracted to them when you first started watching. I don't know that someone who lives in the States, that somebody saying that the Charlotte Hornets is their favorite team when it like jumps out. Just because I would think like some of the bigger market teams would be the ones that were widely. So how did you get to be a fan of the Hornets? Was it what was available, or was it because of a more specific reason?
Just to clarify, I'm a Pelicans fan now because they moved to New Orleans. So that's my team. Okay. The Charlotte Hornets are actually a backstory of the 90s Europe. When you have like sports shops like that when the transformation happened. So because we moved out from communism to, you know, democracy. So we had these like markets where you could buy probably everything. So the Chicago Bulls merchandise you would get, and then you had like some Lakers gear, and you know, so the NBA was like 14 for a European market before you even watched the game. So I was 5 years old, and I got a winter cap with the logo, and I just loved that logo. And the thing that also
old school Hornets logo.
Yeah. That's what connects also to the design, because I fell in love with the logo and the colors, you know, it was something, it stood out. And for a kid, like, I had people saying like, why don't you dress normal? And I'm like, what's normal? And they were like, you know, a black hat. Like, people were not wearing heel. So I was like asking for it, you know, to get bullied or something. But I love that theme. I love the logo. I love the, I had a jacket for winter with that logo. And then I wanted everything that was available. So when we had Alonso morning jersey, I needed that. So I had a scarf. I even have like an old school picture where my whole wall is covered with posters about the Charlotte Hornets. So definitely that's the design factor of building a brand that goes way deeper than just being a market or a team. It's a symbol, like for me, because I wanted everything with that. And, you know, not to say that today's logos are boring, but, you know, they kind of are. You know, everything's in a circle. Maybe a lot of it is the nostalgia of the 90s, because it's like, I feel it's so close to us, but also it's when you look at the calendar, it was so far away. But I was a kid then, and I felt all of the joy from watching that team at night. And when my mom would say, you know, you cannot stay up so late, and I would be like, okay, we'll see who's up at 3. And then my mom would be sleeping, and I was watching the game. And it wasn't like also 2 games each week or so. Most of the games that I watched, like we had them on the Polish TV, but I was watching games on German TV, and I spreche kein Deutsch. So it was like, you know, you're just watching this in a foreign language from a foreign country, and, you know, you're up at 3. So I know most fans in Poland will understand that devotion, and most people in Europe. So that's how we would do that. Like today also, you know, you can either watch the game at night, or you can watch, you know, like a rerun on the next day. But back then it wasn't like that. If you didn't watch the Friday game, you would watch it on Wednesday as a rerun. So you would get the score somewhere. So it wasn't this, you know, you just had to be up. Or you use the old school VHS tape and just tape it over. And then on Saturdays you had NBA action, and you were just waiting for the top 10 plays of the week. So, you know, just talking about it brings me like back to the old school times. So, you know, it helped definitely. But also, when the Hornets moved to New Orleans, I actually had a friend from one of the message boards who actually had this, I'm not sure how it was called, like a little device in the back of his TV. And I could watch just by putting in his IP number. And so he hooked me up like that. They even sent me some t-shirts and memorabilia from the game. Even at one point, I did a poster of this. They had a role player, Ryan Bowen. And Ryan had a good couple of games, and I sent them one of my designs and asked if they could get it signed at the airport, and they actually did. So it was big for me.
That's awesome backstory, understanding how you're able to get it. And yeah, it takes me back to the 90s design of the Hornets. And they were more of a team to watch then too. So that makes sense.
In the Central Division, so they would always play the Bulls like 6 times in a season, I think. So I wasn't a Michael Jordan fan at that point. Like, I still thought, you know, they can do something about it, but not really. Also, one other thing that things just are coming back to me. I used to collect the 1995-96 Upper Deck cards. So that's also in my mind, you know, the white frame and just the picture. And it was like, I don't know, it was so simple, but at the same time, it was like great. Have some guys, so some good cards, and then to this day I collect cards, but maybe not like so much. But I got all of that collection with me too. So plus I was the smallest guy everywhere. So Maxi Bogues was like a role model, you know, like you can do so much being so small and just do what you love, and then all of that transpires. Like, if you give your heart to the game, you know, the game will reward it. no matter what. So I think basketball and life and sports and the essence of sports is incredible. Like it transpires through so many things in life. And that's what I'm trying to do, 7-year-old son. And I'm trying to always tell him, like, you know, sports is awesome. Like, your phone will be there every time. You can play a game, just move, and that will always be better for you. So, plus he sees his dad, you know, playing. Like, we play a lot of soccer together, basketball too. So we have these points. I think that's big. He even did when he was 5, he was like, oh, dad, I want to do what you do. And he designed like two cat designs with Jason Tatum because he just watched the game. And it was like, it's cool also to see a 5-year-old doing things in Photoshop that you don't like for you. Like if you work for years, you have a certain perks that you use. And if you just give a free rein to the kid, it's like, you know, you could do it this way. Like, it's interesting, you know. So that was a cool experience too. Plus, most of his room is like filled with sports memorabilia with signatures and stuff. They also do. I also design cards, posters, and things like that. At one point, with a friend, we were doing posters that we would ask the players to sign after games. We had EuroLeague for some time over here, so we have 300 signed posters with different basketball players. There's even a cool backstory. Last year, we had this thing over here in Poland where they auction a bunch of stuff. So, like, everyone is collecting money for hospitals just to help out the system and everything. It's a pretty cool thing. It works for 32 years. So we gave some cards that we had. I had a Harrison Barnes card, Jeremy Sohan, Marcin Gortat, the Polish Hammer, and a few other guys. And we raised around $400 on those cards. So those, like, the design passion and profession helped the hospital collection. And it will, you know, it gives back to the community and to the country. So I'm always happy about stuff like that.
So in your work, like listening to you talk about the nostalgia of the 90s in the NBA, which those logos were absolutely like great looking back. And I was surprised the starter jacket didn't come up in that conversation because those were awesome.
Yeah, everyone had one of those for sure.
I didn't, yeah, but I had a friend. Yeah.
I had that was the winter jacket. That was the starter one, but it was a NACA. So it was even better because no one had the same one. It wasn't the teal one. I had more black than was a different design.
Yeah. Did you like in today's designs, do you find yourself getting inspiration from that time period, whether it was NBA or whatever else you may have been watching, or because I know you briefly touched on AI and, you know, how you like to honestly do the work yourself, which there's a lot of pride that goes into that and kind of ownership of like, this is like something that I did. So I say all that to say, like, where are you finding the inspiration in today's work? And does that time period of your life kind of, do you tap into that?
Yeah, definitely. Problem with inspiration is that at some point you start copying stuff, you know. So I definitely had a few things that were too close to the original, but also I always try that inspiration to kind of be the foundation of it and then remix the stuff. When it comes to designing cards, like I always look at the beginning of the 2000s and the Upper Deck cards. I don't know. It's just, whenever you look at those things, it's like, it's simple, but it's so, I have those in my mind pretty much. So many times I probably don't even look at them and I have that as an idea of going to, you know, something will be pretty similar to those ideas. And the designers who did the cards back then, that's insane. Like, it's a whole different game. When it comes to poster design, I pretty much try to do my own thing, but sometimes, you know, you get a feeling. I really like the style when people were doing the black t-shirts, because we had a lot of those too down here, you know. So having like a today's player in a bootleg style t-shirt, that's also really cool. I didn't have time yet to do any of those, but it's definitely on my list, and I really enjoy that style. And I definitely look back on things. The problem with me probably is that I don't have the greatest memory out there. So sometimes I will find one of my designs from back in, you know, 5-6 years or something, and I just look at it and I'm like, okay, this was good, this was cool, I can base something new on this, or many times I just forget I did something, because it's like in the social media world, it's like I wait for emails, I do a bunch of designs, and then I move to the next day. So the content-based world is crazy, I would say, because of the amount of the things that we do. But at the same point, it's good, you know, for the amount of things that we do. But I can always look back at some of the designs I did and still be inspired by that and recreate something or go with a new style. And definitely in the 90s or something, go back, you know, the old magazines, like the everything that was in Slam magazine. But it's just like, even today, I think some of those things, like, I don't know how people did that, you know, with the software being, you know, not that great at that point, and like everything dirt flows, it's like much different. I also think they had a lot more time maybe to do something. I think we many times were swamped with the amount of stuff that has to go out. Sometimes it would be better to do something that you can put much more time into. But then if people's attention span is like 1.2 seconds at this point, and 5 years ago it was 4 seconds, it's a different game. You just have to put out as much as possible on a good quality, I would say.
Let's talk about working collaboratively with people across timelines and building your designs. You were talking earlier about building out your 52-page InDesign project, which is fantastic too. And maybe we can jump into that next. But what's your experience working with international clients and trying to bridge the time zone difference?
Yeah, so pretty much I would say based on communication between the client and myself. And it was also different for different periods of my life. So when I was younger, it wasn't a big problem for me to work late night. And then right now it's like 180 degree change, because I can get up pretty early and, you know, start either training or start work from that point. And like with the communication with the clients, I pretty much try to be pretty forward, so they understand like the time zone I work in and the time difference. So if something is really, if something has to be done very fast, I also have like would tell them that, you know, if it doesn't fit the hours, then maybe use a different designer, because many of the agencies and federations that I work with, they have different designers, and many times we just develop this kind of relationship where they ask, you know, do you have time today for this or that? And I'm like, okay, let's go. Or, you know, if you have someone else on your roster that can do this probably faster, then go ahead with that. I would say it's a maturity thing also, because if you're young, you're trying to take everything. And then that goes into the mental health, it goes into burnout, it goes to a bunch of things that as a designer and especially as a freelancer, you cannot, maybe not, you can allow yourself to do anything, because your mental health is super, super important. but I would say it kind of can destroy the whole flow of your of what you're doing, and you have to be making money and you have to be working, you know, to get a profit and for things to work out. I have pretty much a different relationship with each of the clients. So some of them know exactly that they can email me at 6 a.m. and then I wake up kind of, you know, sometimes earlier, sometimes at 6. And I just look over my emails and see, you know, if something is super urgent or, you know, if I have some more time for it. And then I have to prioritize my day based on that. I like simplicity. So the reminders app on Apple is like everything I need. So I prioritize the work based on the day. And sometimes, like, I work in a co-work office. So people would laugh at me that I come in for the second shift. So sometimes I come back at like 6 p.m. or so. And then I do a second shift if that's needed. The big thing is that my family understands that. They know that this is the type of work I selected, and it has the, like, maybe a family minus from time to time, but it also has some upside. Like, we had three free days over here in May, just to start off May, and I was able to take two additional days just like that, you know, just having my laptop with me. I would work for 2 hours and the rest of the family time. But that's also something that I would tell my clients ahead of time. I wouldn't leave my client in the dark and be like, oh no, I'm not in today. They know that what days I'm in.
So it sounds like the clients that you're working with are consistent and more contract style clients as opposed to one-off freelance clients. Is that accurate?
Yeah, but I sometimes also take like a one-off, and you know, it depends who calls me and what they are willing to kind of participate in. Like with freelancing, you probably know really fast if someone is going to pay you or not. You know, when you say there's like a 40 or 50% down payment, but it also varies. Sometimes you will take, you know, less money. I mean, less of a down payment and just see because you like the project, but that's also something that you take on yourself and you have to understand that. And some clients are returning clients, so you know exactly, maybe I don't have to charge so much upfront because I know this person always pays on time. And in the end, it's a respect game, you know? Someone disrespects me once, well, you know, shame on me, right? But twice, no. The experience you get from over 20 years, sometimes you will choose a deal that is not ideal, but you need it at that point, you know, because you see how your month is looking and you say, oh, maybe this will be a cool project or maybe this will be a client that's returning. So I would say it's always based on the example at hand, especially in freelance, because you have to really account your time. If you don't have those 15 hours a day, or, you know, you don't want to go crazy and only work in your life, because there's also things that you want to do, you know, hobbies, you know, family life, etc. So if you're working all the time, then, you know, it's, even if you love the work, like people are saying, like, if you love the work, you haven't worked. I don't remember the phrase, but I think everyone will.
You don't work a day in your life or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not true. Basketball players get paid too. I guess most of them love playing ball, right? Or, you know, any other sport. Or there are a bunch of professions where people would say, oh, I love what I'm doing. Yeah, I also love what I'm doing, but I also like to do some other things, you know, aside from it. So based on that, there's a balance. There's a, you know, at some point you let go of the client that you're not actually meshing with, and it can work for the other designer. It's not like this is a bad client or whatever. It just doesn't work for you at this point of your career or your year, you know? So not everyone experiences the same, and not everyone has the same amount of time or energy to go with different type of clients. So I would say, from one client to another kind of basis.
Let's touch a little bit on the mental health side of things and how you approach keeping your mental health top of mind and working with clients and balancing life with your family. How do you approach that and making sure that you're there for yourself and that you're in good shape ahead of, so that you can serve your clients better and live the life that you want to live?
You have to hit a few lows to learn about a few highs. So I would say the experience is always the key. Like, today's world is like kind of, don't experience any, you know, bad things because they shouldn't be happening to you, etc. Well, many of the bad things will teach you a lot of good things. So I had a few points in my life where I felt like I was overworked and I took too much in. But that kind of was a learning process of knowing myself. Like, we don't know ourselves so good, I would say, at the age of like 18 or something. You're still developing like the sense of yourself. So I had to learn a lot, and I had to learn the hard way many times. And there were a few moments of real low time, and I just had a feeling that, you know, mental health is something that we should take care of better. And then the pandemic hit, and I just saw how, like, that's like another chapter. And I just saw how crucial it was for even the people in the same community, even if it's international community, to kind of go together. And we had the designing sports meetups on YouTube, and young designers would watch that and they would ask questions. And we were just a bunch of people talking, you know, we had different, maybe not guests, but people who joined us on a particular day. I did that with Joe Cahon and Dan Beltran. So, and we, you know, when you hit a certain vibe with people and it just flows, you know, we had so much fun. It was like, it got me something in the pandemic to look forward to in the actual design community. So, and then I hit like a second low in the pandemic, and I went on the scale and saw like where I was going. And I didn't like that. You know, it's different for everyone. Like, everyone has some points that they just don't feel like, you know, themselves or whatever. So I made a few important changes to my daily routine. Like, since that time, I try to walk between 9,000 and 15,000 steps a day. I got into jogging because I went on a three mile run. I ended up at like a 1.5, and almost, you know, got a heart attack at that point. And I was like, no, this is not going. I'm not going down at 30 something. I don't want that to be the reason, you know, because I was sitting too much all my life. And you know, I also don't have regrets because I was sitting so much, or you know, not being, you know, taking care of certain things because I was working hard because I wanted to achieve something. So I'm not going to be hard on myself for that. I just understand like the repercussions of those things. And since that point, I think my daily routine gotten better. My health gotten better, because this is a very lonely. A very lonely profession. If you're working as a freelancer, you can have your family and you can have different things, but most of the day you're in your mind, you're in your headphones, you're in your project, and you don't communicate with other creatives, like how their day is. And and I think that gives back, you know, we're like humans. We're, I don't know how they call it, like the wolf pack or whatever. You need your community to kind of excel, because we aren't loners, even if I'm an introvert. So I don't like many social moments aren't really my best thing, like to put it mildly, but I do understand that we need communities and we need people, and that's also something that's changing in the world, like I would say. And yeah.
So the 52-page document that you did, what was enjoyable about working on that particular project?
What was enjoyable? Pretty much everything. It was like the planning of it was enjoyable. The whole process was great too. I would say it's also fun that you know that people will be downloading that. And the fact that my clients said that they think it was the, like, they liked it the most, like. But I was also the person that did most of the brand look for the season. So I tried to keep that media kit on brand with, aside from the Final Four stuff, to be consistent with the brand that we were doing the whole season. But also, I really liked the look from the beginning, from the idea, from everything. So it was fun working on it for the whole season. And then when I got the media kit, I pretty much had a lot of stuff already, you know, prepared, and I was able to kind of mesh things together and add all of the text and the features that they wanted over there to kind of pop together. So I would say I was extremely tired because it was a big project for me. It's for one person to handle. But in the end, like, when I had right after the project, I had a few days off and I recharged, and then I had a feeling like, yeah, that was some good work in there. And I was really happy with the end result. And especially it's huge whenever your client says that it's something that they wanted and something that, you know, was brought in on time, and everyone kind of worked together. So that's definitely a lot of points, you know, that are interesting in a design process, I would say.
And for an international freelancer like yourself, getting a chance to work on things globally, what's kind of the process of getting people to work with you, and how are you like bringing new clients into the door?
The thing is, I still think a kind of word to mouth kind of reputation works, and people find different things that they like. And that's something that I would say is the first thing. You also try to market yourself as much as possible. You try to connect with people, and just be in those places. You know, and once you catch a client or agency that works with your flow and you like working with them, that's beneficial to the both sides of things. So I would say, those are big factors. I was never incredible at self-marketing. So for me to do a BS project, that's always like, or doing a portfolio, I was always lacking in that. And I would say I can still do a lot better with those things. But I also go into like the mode that it might not be my thing. You know, it's not my strong point. So I try to use the other ways to get new clients, and then when I have a good client, I try to maintain, you know, the relationship. It's kind of better. Like, we have this tendency to give new clients something cheaper or to give a discount or something, but it's also great to kind of give your most the current client that you like working with, you sometimes just write free of charge. You know, if it took 10 minutes, sometimes, you know, you don't charge that time, you know, or if it was your mistake on anything, you can also go that route. Like with my freelancing, I pretty much try to bill, track and bill the hours that I work for each client, because I have to be really on top of that stuff. And then when an invoice is coming, they know exactly, like, my client isn't hit with an invoice like, this is this much. No, my client knows the amount they owe me or the hours that that it took me throughout the different projects. And, you know, if it's a monthly based thing, or anything like that, it's again, communication, I would say, and being organized. So it's on the daily routine, the to-dos and the hour tracking. It has to be on point for a freelancer, because I would say the clients also like to have a simple process. You know, they come to you for a project and they get a project and they know exactly how that project went and what it costs, you know. To the point where everyone is comfortable, like you know, people, most clients will know that if they hit me up at 3 a.m. and say, "You up?" and they don't get an answer, then that project's probably not going to happen immediately. And if the communication, the relationship is good, then we all kind of know what we can do and what we can achieve.
What advice would you give to creatives, no matter where they are, who would be interested in maybe crossing borders and working with clients outside of their region or their country or wherever they are in the world, of being able to effectively do that?
I would say pretty much believe in yourself, reach out to people, connect with people, and learn the languages. Because if I didn't learn English at some point, you know, I probably wouldn't go this route. I would probably not go international. And, you know, I have some people to thank for that. My mom and my brother in particular, for getting us cable and Cartoon Network at 6 years old. That's where I started learning English. So that would be crucial, you know. And even if you're not great at a different language, then just try. You know, there are ways to learn. There are ways to get better. Don't be afraid, because what's the worst thing that can happen? Someone can say no to you, and that's it. You know, like, if we put too much emotion into that, then it will be a loss, you know. But if we try to go through it, and if we, you know, sometimes you have to reach out to 100 people to get the 101st person to agree to something. So do that, and also value your time, value your boundaries, value what's important to you, and that will definitely help. But then again, everyone's road is different. Like, if I would give the same advice to me being 15 right now, it would probably not be a valid advice as me being, you know, 30 something. So it depends on the time you are starting. But each time I would say just if you love it, then try it. Even if you don't reach clients, then just do it for fun. And then maybe some clients will come. That can happen too. Like, when I was 15, I had a bunch of street ballers knocking on my door wanting to get some work done. You know, it was a learning process too, because many didn't pay for what they ordered. But, you know, and also to that point, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to learn things through bad things happening, because those things can happen to anyone. And if you can learn from them, it's big too. Like, experience cannot be bought. You know, you just have to live through different things to understand them and to get some value out of them.
From one Darius to another, we appreciate you joining the show, making the time. You know, we're in different time zones. You and I are 7 hours apart. You and Justin are 6 hours apart. So we definitely appreciate the time, getting a chance to, you know, hear your story and your background. And, you know, shout out to the Charlotte Hornets who, you know, inspired you to, you know, be a creative. So that's always awesome to hear how people really got that itch or where they begin. So thanks for joining.
Thanks a lot. I hope I wasn't too boring for you guys.
Not at all.
Yeah.
I have to listen to Justin all the time. I'm just kidding. He knows that I'm joking.
Wow. You guys are perfect hosts.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.